Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And on today's show, we have Heather Seitz. Hey, Heather.
Hi, Heather. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome.
I came across your work via the Film Sorority Instagram.
Yep.
I'm one of the co-curators there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I love what you're doing. So we're definitely excited to have you. So do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners who may not know who you are?
Sure. My name is Heather Seitz. I live in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Oh, awesome. I love Canada.
I am a Canadian photographer. I have been doing this for a long time. My dad was a photographer, so that's how I got into photography originally.
Cool.
And I grew up with an analog darkroom in my basement.
He worked
as a photojournalist for the Toronto Star and for the Mississauga Times. And so I grew up with a darkroom in my basement, and that's how I really got into photography. So I learned on film first. So when I, you know, got into high school, I took a bunch of photography classes. And then from there, I ended up going to Sheridan College, which is just outside of Toronto. It's a pretty highly regarded photography school, it's an art school, but they have a really great photography program there. And then, yeah, I just kind of, the rest is history, I guess. I did an art direction and creative advertising diploma course after at York University, which is in Toronto. So I have gone forward in my career with this really sort of specialized skill set of having all of these really sort of usable commercial photography skills, but then all of this sort of art direction, editorial art direction, advertising side of the coin as well. So that's kind of how I've progressed in my career. It took me a long time to accept digital photography, like a long time. Like,
wow.
I failed my Photoshop course at Sheridan. Like, I just didn't want to do it. I didn't have any interest in it whatsoever.
That's so funny.
Man.
Yeah.
So was that was it though. So that time in college, so photo, you're in the digital era of photography during, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was like the beginning of the digital era.
Okay.
Things were just starting to switch over from film. When I got into the industry and started working in Toronto, there were a lot of photographers still shooting on medium format and 4x5 film that I worked with and assisted. But I also worked at like a really big commercial photography studio in Toronto that was doing a lot of catalog work, and they were just switching over to digital. So all of the big cameras there were all going digital. So I feel really lucky that I've seen both worlds.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it kind of makes you appreciate the film. Like, because I kind of did too. I started on film, went to school, and it was same thing right around that time of graduation. Everybody was like buying digital cameras on top of the film camera that we had just gotten for school. And to like be away from it and then to come back, you're just like, oh yeah, this is it.
Well, at the time, it was like people were just going crazy. They were like, wow, digital, it's revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
But I find now, and we can maybe get into this in a bit, but things have reversed. People are really excited about film stuff. I actually just got back from an estate sale where I bought a Sony Handycam, like mint condition. And I'm like, look at this. It's so cool, you guys. Anyway, so that's a little bit about me. Yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Are you 100% film with what you do now, or do you kind of have to do both? Like sometimes there's jobs that I have to do that like If I showed up with a bag of film, they'd be like, what are you, crazy?
Yeah, no, I'm doing both now. So this past year with the pandemic has been very, mm-hmm. very, very difficult for my business. So I've lost almost all of my commercial clients.
Oh, man.
Yeah. When I got out of school and then eventually when I started working for magazines and for the Calgary Herald and I started doing a lot of commercial work, I was forced to go digital. And I really learned a lot about the medium at that time. But in the past year or so, because things have shifted so dramatically with my business, I'm not doing as many of these really big commercial advertising jobs anymore, which were all shot digital for the most part, because it's just that type of work. Now I'm working with a lot of bands. I'm working with a lot of artists. I'm doing a lot of work now where people are coming to me and they're like, hey, I want you to take my headshot, but I want you to shoot it on film because that's what you do really well.
Wow.
And let me tell you the reason why I started doing this is because my digital camera is like on the outs. It has like 175,000 actuations on it. It's been put through the ringer. It is like has been my main commercial camera. But because the last year has been so difficult for me, commercially and for my business, I'm trying to like not spend that, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 right now.
Oh yeah.
So when I started putting calls out, being like, "Hey guys, want to shoot this on film instead?"
Yeah.
To buy me some time in buying a new digital camera. It's actually working out really well because the film stuff is like, I'm able to use my Nikon, my F90X. It takes great film photos and the results are like so creative.
Yeah. I really feel like with your work, especially you can almost tell that, you know,
it speaks to the type of work that I do.
Right.
Like even on the art direction side of my business and where like the conceptual side, like the film just really ties everything together, I think.
Do you do both at the same time, or do you have separate jobs, or you're just a photographer, separate jobs, or just the art director, or are you like a package deal, like somebody hires you for both?
Normally it's a package deal. So
that's
normally
great.
People will come to me because I have like really conceptual ideas and I'm able to sort of plot out a shoot or determine how we're going to get multiple looks in a shoot. I just think it comes back to my aesthetic, but that's kind of with every photographer, right? You hire a photographer because of their look or because you love their work. I guess for me now, it's a combo of that plus the film. I do have other clients. Like I work as a director for film as well. And then I do have some other clients where I do consulting and a little bit of like design and art direction. So, but yeah, that's a whole nother podcast. But I think that now I'm getting a lot of clients and a lot of people come to me and be like, hey, we want to hire you because of film, because of the way that your work looks.
I think that maybe more recently brands and stuff are like, I want you. And a lot of it comes with like, okay, but I shoot film. They're like, okay, great. Like whatever.
Yeah.
They're not like coming back with, well, can you do it on digital? Cause they are realizing like, no, it's the look, you know?
Totally.
So I think that's really awesome.
And like you can apply filters in Lightroom and Photoshop and you can do...
It's just not the same.
It's not the same. And also like the process with film is better for me. It's actually less time consuming. There's more like driving around and dropping stuff off at labs. But like the process is more organic.
I totally get that.
Uploading a bunch of digital images and screwing around with the curves in Lightroom and like, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I prefer the process with film.
I have such a terrible time with digital photos. Like I tried at the beginning of COVID. I had a nice little Sony mirrorless camera and I was like, I'm gonna try this for a week. You know, I'm gonna give myself a week and try to really not hate this. Cause I, you know, I'm the film photography guy. So like I'm always like film. And I had this really nice Sony camera. I'm like, I'm gonna try to do something with it just to see if I'm capable. And just I can't get edits to look right. Mm. You know, it just doesn't feel the same when you push the button. There's the excitement of taking the film cartridge out and writing on there, like +3, the date. It's just there's so much fun stuff that's involved with being a film shooter.
Well, and don't you think it's funny? Like, I'll load my digital photos in, but then I mess around with them so much so that they look like film and then I'm happy with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not really happy with them if they're not. And you can like buy all these super expensive presets that are like Portra 800 preset, only $200.
Yeah.
Like, just shoot it on film.
Might as well just shoot it on film, yeah.
But yeah, easier said than done, though.
Yeah.
I think when you speak about the process, too, it's like when you shoot a whole, like, I remember the first engagement session, I'm like, I'm only going to shoot film. So I shot, you know, I don't remember how many rolls, but those were the images. There wasn't like, okay, now I have like 1,500 images to pick, yeah, like 20 for a blog post, you know?
Right.
There was like, these were the ones and they were all good. And that, it just like changes the whole way you shoot,
it
too.
It does. Yeah. And like the other day I was doing a portrait shoot and we decided that we were going to shoot 3 rolls of 35 millimeter. So it's like, okay, I'm going to, I allot half a roll to this. We're going to try you in this setting, half a roll, going to do half a roll in this setting. So you're not just like aimlessly shooting and,
right.
And it's a lot more controlled and my eye is stronger, I think, when we're shooting like that.
Yeah. It's so funny because even I've been on set where the person, you know, in charge is like, keep going, let's just keep going, and it's like, I've already gotten it. I don't like, the model knows we got it, I know we got it, but you just like, because it's endless, digital's yeah, like endless, they're just like, well, let's just keep going.
Yeah, there are still, yeah, times, and I don't know about you guys, but I will actually proof everything on digital and I will shoot a little bit of digital as a backup. So yeah, because I did do a job of about a month ago with a band, and the first half of the roll, for whatever reason, I think it's because the flash wasn't going off, didn't turn out. It was just black. But I had, yeah, some digital backups. So that was that's how I'm doing that now.
Yeah, the digital backups, it's like you're so happy when you need it, you know? But otherwise, it's like, ah.
I don't even look at them. I just throw them away.
Yeah.
You find them like 6 months later. You're like, yeah, oh, yeah, these. I forgot about that.
Well, because 9.5 times out of 10, I don't even need to look at the digital. The film ones are so good. So yeah. I don't even load them into the computer half the time. I just get the film back and I'm like, oh, these are great. So, yeah.
I don't know what it is, but the magic always happens with the film camera. Like, I'm fortunate enough, as I said 8 million times on this show, that I'm not like a paid working commercial, whatever, wedding photographer. I'm just a hardcore hobby dude that loves this. You know, I'm just like super passionate about it. And I work mostly for myself. And when I was doing senior portraits and paid portraits and headshots and stuff, the panic would ensue all the time when I couldn't go do the shoot without a digital camera slung around too, because you know, you're kind of scared. It's like you said, you know, some of those photos, they went black, you know. Those things do happen with film, but rarely ever. And again, those digital photos, they just end up sitting on a disc somewhere that you never use, and you just need to hang on to that confidence, because it's like, you know, you got it.
Yeah.
Right.
You know you're gonna do it, you know, you're gonna kill it, it's gonna be awesome.
So I've lost stuff on digital. Yeah. I thought the card was backed up,
and
it wasn't.
All my stuff, like pretty much from like the last 5 years, I can tell you where it is right now. That was digital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true, actually.
Unfortunately.
It's just, and it's like, yeah, actually it's now shooting, I'm more careful when I'm shooting film now. And there's little ways to get around it, like just making sure if I'm using strobes with the film, I'll just make sure that the little beep sound is on the strobe so that I know for a fact it's going and that it's syncing with the camera. There's just little things. I don't know. I just prefer the whole process overall.
So going back to your roots, do you still do any like developing or darkroom stuff now, or is it?
I don't. No, I don't
kind
process
of a thing
my
of the
own
past,
film.
Yeah.
Partially because I live in like a 450 square foot apartment. There's just nowhere
I get that,
to do it here.
Right.
Is it something that I want to, do I want to get into that? Maybe if I was shooting black and white. I haven't really gotten back into black and white, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. It's not super my aesthetic. My aesthetic is like bright and colorful and very vintage. You know, that's just my aesthetic. So I think that that's also why film works so well. But there is something really special about processing film. And especially when I was like a teenager developing film in my parents' basement and then making friends with the enlarger, like all the other kids, like I was 16 and like spending the weekends in this dark room in my parents' basement. Like, and
same.
I just remember like watching, seeing the in the tray as the image starts coming up, like
magic.
It's literal magic. And I've always thought dark rooms are like the coolest, like most romantic places. You know?
So true.
Yes.
The red light, like, they're so cool. We're nerds.
one of my fondest memories of high school. We've joked about it a bunch of times because I was like more interested in a girl in my photography class than actual photography at that time in high school. I was just like, wow, Megan is so beautiful. I can't. I still remember the bat. We always called it the bat cave, you know, the circle mm-hmm. door that goes into the dark room. And it's just like some of the best memories ever. And it is literal magic. Like you see the image appear and you did that. You took that process from pointing the camera to it, pressing the button, taking it in. See, I don't have a dark room now, but I do all my film. I develop it myself. I just love that there's this like communion I have with developing film. I have to take it from A to B to C to D or it's yeah. not mine. You know, I'm just so, I guess I'm a little too hardcore at times with this stuff, but
not me.
Yeah. I'm starting to feel that way. I'm like, man, these lab prices aren't that bad. Maybe yeah. I should try it out.
It's also like color, developing color scares me a little bit. We actually, I should learn that though. We opened up, my business partner and I in Calgary opened up a photo studio collective, and we went out and bought a bunch of color chemistry and stuff. And we're encouraging the members that are, you know, part of our photography collective to develop their own film, their own color film at the studio. So I should probably take them up on that, because then you can start, you know, pushing the color temperatures and like mm-hmm. you can get some cool yeah. creative stuff with that. So maybe that'll be next pandemic for me. Yeah.
Next pandemic project.
Yeah, it does. It can get crazy with the, like, I guess it would be like a post-processing kind of thing. Like yeah. once we had Wendy, who does all the souping her film and yes. you know, mixing it with wine. And it's just, man, it's endless.
Yeah.
It's endless. And it just feels like another creative release. You know,
yeah.
it's
yeah.
just as, I think it's just as creative as actually making the photograph.
Yeah. Well, there's a thing with film also where it's like, okay, I've mastered this camera. I've mastered mm-hmm. this kind of film. Where can I go next? Oh, let's try expired yeah. film. Oh, let's try yep. film soup. Oh, let's try. So you're always kind of pushing yourself. I got a new like little point and shoot camera today in an estate sale. I'm going to take it out after this and just put a roll of film through it and drop it off later. You know, just see. Like,
yeah.
it's a plastic lens. That kind of excites me. I'm like,
yeah,
it's plastic lens. You know, plastic lens. Like, it really, it's a different look.
It really is. You know? Yeah.
So it's like we get so hung up on like the best, got to get the best glass, got to be Zeiss, got to be this, and then you shoot with a plastic lens. You're like, oh, that's cool too.
Like, so we're always trying to think, find ways to push the film envelope just a little bit further. Mm-hmm. You know, which is also really exciting with that medium, I think.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people, at least myself, I was talking about this with my friend AJ Holmes, where I was, because he's like a large format guy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I feel like that's like the next generation, like graduation for a lot of us. Like
yeah.
we've already done 35, we're like 120 is great. Like what else? You know, it's like
yeah.
that what else about the whole
What's
thing?
Next?
Totally. Yep.
What's next?
It's and there's so yeah. many different types of film formats that you can experiment with and mm-hmm. so many different types of cameras. Is it like that with digital? I'm trying to think. I guess it's different techniques in the computer is what you would maybe liken it
yeah.
to.
I mean, that's what originally drew me to film. I think we talked about this with our previous guest, Birgit,
mm-hmm.
like lamography, like just how outside of the box lamography is with things.
Yeah.
Like they
yeah.
were all about, you know, shooting from the hip and do what makes, like, do what, like, you want to have fun, you know, and it doesn't have to be so bland and, you know, you're supposed to go out and have fun. So.
Yeah.
Like we said just a little bit ago, you know, we were making our digital photos look like film, and I would do that. I'd put like crusty overlay filters on that makes it look like I shot it out of a Holga or something mm-hmm. like that. So,
well, you know what's funny? Do you guys remember when Instagram like first started? I think it was mm-hmm. maybe called Hipstagram or no,
yes,
or like yeah. Hipstamatic or something.
Yes, Hipstamatic.
Yeah. And then it was like, and then I think, don't quote me on this, but I think that morphed into Instagram, or Instagram kind of copied them or something. But in the beginning, it was just the sharing platform and the filters and everything about it, the logo, everything about it was
yeah.
this digital yep. platform, but it was all made to look analog. That was like, mm-hmm. that's actually what was the beauty of it. That's why it took off. People were like, whoa,
yeah.
where'd you
yeah.
get this cool film photo? It's like, no, it's from this new app.
Yeah. I remember about Hipstamatic too, where they were like, you basically could shuffle all the filters and lenses and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So like when you pressed it, it would like pick all that and then give you a different... So it was like sort of like getting your film developed, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do remember that.
There's
a really
great digital app. I don't know if you guys know it. It's called Daz Camera. So that's what I use now.
Oh,
for
I think
all
I've
my,
heard of that.
It's
yeah.
the best. It's not the cheapest. I think it's like $15 or $20. Or maybe it's cheaper in the States. I don't know. But it's the same type of idea. It loads up a whole bunch of different types of film video cameras and then a whole bunch of different type of film photography cameras. And then you can like pick things. You can even like apply like a star filter. It's a pretty good app. I really enjoy it for like just doing, you know, stuff on my phone.
That's cool.
Gascam.
With this pandemic, just sitting on my phone for hours at a time, looking at what the, like kind of how people are mixing old VHS looking footage to this digital age. Like I watched a tutorial of how this, I forget, man, I wish I could remember their name, because I want people to, they don't have like the biggest following, I forget, I can't think of it, but they actually use like an old Sony camcorder, you know, tape camcorder, to shoot all their TikToks, and just like adding that crazy new fast editing style that we have these days of, you know, everything's got to be like this.
Right.
And, but they're doing it on a VHS turned the other way, you know, it's just wild, like mixing this stuff, like taking old technology and making it fresh again, you know, like that's just, it's really cool.
Like vintage.
Totally.
You know,
there's such a market for it.
But like futuristic too, you know what I mean? Like it's because, I don't know, I always think of like Back to the Future when they like go to the future and how funny 80s the future looked, but like still it was like, oh, there were laces that tied themselves and stuff like that, you know, like and like we're living in that time now. It's
totally.
It's kind of weird.
That's funny. So Heather, you're also the co-founder of something called the Idle Eyes Collective, is that
yeah, so that's our studio that I was just mentioning. So
yeah,
this is another pandemic project that's actually turned into something really, really great. I'm pretty proud of it. So I had a photo studio downtown, and I had been in that space for a while, and just like a commercial photo studio. And when the pandemic hit, all of my studio mates decided that they couldn't afford the studio anymore.
Oh.
So we had to give our lease. It was too expensive and too big of a space for me to just stay on by myself. But I sort of approached my friend and fellow photographer in Calgary. His name is Sebastian Basilino, and he shoots a lot of music. He used to tour with bands a lot. So our styles are aesthetic. There's definitely like some crossover there. But I sort of approached him. We had talked about starting like a zine together or something, doing like a little like film collective of sorts, just kind of like over beers before the pandemic, in the December before the pandemic. So when I had to give up my studio, I was like, hey man, like, you know, do you want to get a space together? And then that morphed into, well, let's get a space together, but that let's make it community oriented. Because we'd just gone through and seen everything that happened with the George Floyd killing, and there was all of the pandemic stuff, and all of a sudden there was this need to do something a little bit more for our community, or to do something that had a little bit of a broader purpose, and to give back to the photography community, not in the sense of like, wow, we're going to open up a massive commercial photo studio and, you know, all the ad agencies are going to come here to shoot and it's going to be like $800 a day to rent. It was more like, let's do this at a grassroots level. Let's, you know, bring on members, you know, typically junior photographers or people who want to learn things like shooting on film and messing around with different types of cameras. Let's set up a little bit more of a just interactive analog photography creative studio space.
That's so wonderful.
So that's what
I love
we did.
It. I love it.
And it's going really well. I think we have 9 members now, 8 or 9
that's
members,
great.
And then plus Sebastian and myself. So we all kind of share the space. A lot of us are using it for commercial jobs, but then when we have time, we're processing color film in the bathroom. And we are looking at taking over another space in our building that will act as a gallery. So we're just trying to buy a little bit of time there. And then eventually when we're not, I don't know what your COVID situation's like there, but we're in like a third wave. So we need to just sort of buy a little bit of time so that when we are able to, we'll be able to do gallery exhibitions featuring analog photography, really creative photography, hold events. Mm. Cannot wait to hold events again.
Oh, gosh.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
Just like, oh, yeah.
Just give back to the creative side of the photography community. Yeah. So that's Idle Eyes Collective. It's just for your listeners. It's Idle, so IDLE, Eyes, EYES. We came up with the name to sort of talk about the concept of idle hands, but this is like idle eyes. Mm. So what happens if you close your eyes and actually create work from within? What happens if you're creating work like not on a surface level, but you're actually doing it because it's intrinsic or because it's just something that you have to do?
Oh, man.
I feel like a lot of our listeners and me and Tim, we all relate, can all relate to that. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm 100%. Totally feeling that right there.
Yeah. If you're this dedicated to shooting in an analog format, I feel like that's where it's coming from. Like a pure love of photography.
So if you're a member, does that just get you access to all the tools that are at the space?
Yeah. So we basically, Sebastian and I, put in a bunch of our own gear and our own money. We had the members apply basically because we couldn't take on, we're doing it slowly because we wanted to make sure that everyone had equal access to the studio. But basically we have a booking calendar and then the members just can book in whenever the studio is free. And with their monthly membership, they get access to all of the equipment that we've put in. We provide backdrops for them. We try to buy a new backdrop every month or so. There's like a little makeup area. Yeah, it's like a fully working commercial photography studio.
That is so smart.
We built a gear cage so that the members can leave their gear there. Eventually, when we're able to do exhibitions and everything, we'll do a members exhibition. Yeah, so that's
That's so awesome.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It's like a little, it's an arts collective, but geared towards photography. And then we also give them a studio to work out of and just to grow their skills. And we've even put in a couple of our own film cameras. Like I donated a Pentax 35mm K1000 with like three lenses and some filters and stuff. So if they want to use that, they just ask and they can sign it out kind of thing.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's been like the goal. I can't wait. Like we were just saying, I cannot wait for this pandemic to be over because my little tablet of ideas is like almost near its end. I'm going to have to crack a new one open which I think has been really good for everybody. I mean, yes, this pandemic has been absolutely devastating. And the climate of the world for the last year was just a mess. But I think a lot of good things are going to come out of this in the next, the next like 5 to 10 years. There's going to be a lot of good work, a lot of good art, great music. It's just, I just can't wait.
I think that everyone is sort of in the same boat. Like, it's been equally heartbreaking and stressful AF.
Right.
For me, but it's also really forced me to kind of take a step back and reassess what I want to do with my photography career and where I want to go. And I was too busy shooting commercial campaigns that weren't necessarily getting me any further in my career.
Right.
When actually I'm gearing up now, and this is a terrifying thing for me. So I talk about it a lot, but when I actually start doing it, there's going to be a lot of no's. So I need to get myself ready for that. But my goal now is to get an agent in another city.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So to represent me, because I need to get my work out of Calgary because I feel like there's a bigger market for it. And I feel like my film knowledge and I just working with a lot of musicians and bands and stuff. So this is what I've been doing over the entire pandemic. And this is why I've been going so hard on the film side of things is just like honing my skills.
Yeah. Do you have representation now?
I do not. No.
Yeah, that's something I've always like.
Yeah.
That's like a dream of mine to like have an agent. Yeah.
I think that's the next logical step with any photographer. It's really scary because for me, it's really scary. I just like I'm bracing myself to hear a lot of no's before I hear a yes. So, yeah.
I really think your works can stand on its own. I really think that you have your work is phenomenal. And
that's so kind of you to say. Like, I'm actually feeling like I'm gonna start crying.
No, it's just like I can relate to that. It's going to be no's, but like you have to like you like you're speaking about like, you know, your knowledge and honing your skills. It's like your work, I feel like, speaks for itself because I was drawn to it. And I feel like any age is going to look at that and be like, OK, you know,
oh, yeah. That's really nice to say.
She gets it.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it's just like I would have never had this idea if it hadn't have been for the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So when we went into lockdown last year in March, like full-blown lockdown, like they shut everything here. It was like all of my jobs got canceled, all of my commercial jobs. I found myself just like being in my apartment. And also I was like terrified. I was like, I'm going to get it and I'm going to give it to you and I'm going to die. And so I just like stayed in my apartment and like started taking photos.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that, your self-portraits. Yeah. I saw that on Instagram. Like, so, I love that because I can't do it. I try to do self-portraits and I'm just like, I don't even know where to begin. So, yeah, how did that all come about?
Well, that's how it started.
The pandemic.
I'd never taken photos of myself like that. I never actually really had the self-confidence, to be honest with you. I never really had the time. I didn't really need to. I always had people to photograph. But when the lockdown started, I was like, okay, well, I need to do something. So I'm going to start taking photos of myself. I experimented with like taking photos of like flowers on mirrors and I did some tabletop stuff, but like I'm a people portrait photographer.
Yeah.
So the only person around was me. So I started taking photos and I actually did more. Some months I did 2. I think in total I came out of it with 14 self-portraits.
Wow.
So some of them are shot on film. Some of them are shot digitally. There's one, I think it was in about May. I was like, well, let's do another self-portrait. And I had my old studio at the time. So I just went into the studio one night and I like brought some beer and I was by myself. And I was like, you know what? Let's test all of these film cameras on the strobes.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, let's see what these cameras do under the strobes. Because I hadn't done that in like years.
Yeah. It's scary when you do that. Yeah.
Like you don't know. And so that's what I did. And some of the shots turned out great. A couple of the cameras didn't really. I learned how to use, I learned that my medium format Mamma Mia worked. It has, it worked in the studio with the flash. So I had always used that camera for travel and stuff. And this year I actually experimented with shooting some portraiture on it. I have a Mamma Mia 6, like a square range finder, one of the ones from the 90s, which is probably my favorite camera. I think you guys were going to ask me that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did that one day and then that led to taking more photos and more photos. And it was like a really great thing to do. There was always something in my mind that was like, oh, well, taking self-portraiture and putting it on Instagram is like a selfie. And it's not, there's no merit behind that. But then
that's so untrue.
But then I started doing self-portraiture and I was like, holy shit, this is hard.
Yeah.
I was like, this is really hard.
Yeah.
So, and then you try to get into creative things like blurring, like dragging the shutter so that you get some blurred motion. But yeah, I'm kind of a pro at it now, I think.
Awesome. I love that. Yeah.
I think, you know, the pandemic, it went one way or the other for a lot of people. Like you were like, well, I'm still going to shoot. There's only me. That's what I'm going to do. And like the other side was like, I don't want to take pictures of anything, which is kind of where I was at for a little while. But I like, really love that it wasn't that way for you and you're able to like even just to experiment. Like I should have been like just messing around. Like what was I doing? You know?
I was trying to tell you that.
I know. I just it was just too like emotionally like not gonna happen.
No.
But
and that's the thing. I know a lot of people like that. Don't beat yourself up over that. I know a lot of people like that who just, you know, everything started and it was really overwhelming and the ideas just like went out the window.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I don't know. Honestly, like I live alone. I needed to do something.
Yeah.
It kind of kept my mental health in check a little bit, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's good.
I get that. Yeah.
And having a studio during this time, and this is something that we talk about at Idolize, our collective, a lot, is that having that creative space to go and just like mess around has been life-saving in a lot of regards.
I can imagine.
So, I'm grateful for that for sure. I'd like to show those self-portraits. Maybe that's something, you know, eventually we're able to, is just kind of like lay them all out on my computer. I should do this tonight or tomorrow or something and just see how they all look together. Like they're all really different. Yeah. So
that'd be a cool zine too.
Yeah, I guess so. Like just weird that it's all of me. I don't know. I can't get past that sometimes.
Yeah, I think of that. I think of the whole, like just, you know, when you were going through it with getting out and taking pictures and, you know, I just kept shooting like normal. Cause my, mm-hmm. again, my thing is just like cruising around, doing some street photography, doing some documentary, doing some whatever, flowers, cats, people, this, that, yeah. you know, so it nothing really changed for me. But there was a point where I remember being, if I take one more discarded mask photo yeah. on the street, yeah. I'm going to lose my damn mind. Yeah. So like it yeah. There comes a time where you kind of have to pick a subject and maybe work on that.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be images that maybe you or other people have taken and we'll look back and feel like, man, if they just didn't have the mask on, it would be such a good shot. You know?
I know. And also we're going to be able to look back on this time. Like I've been watching like a lot of like live streams with musicians and stuff. And you mm-hmm. look back on that in 10 years and be like, oh, this was recorded during the pandemic because they're all wearing masks. Yeah.
Right.
It's like a time stamp.
Crazy. Are you seeking out commercial work or is that kind of phase over now? Are you like shifting completely or do you think you'll book some stuff if it comes your way or where are you at with that?
I need commercial work to pay the bills yeah. and survive.
Yep. Yep.
I just don't know how to do that in Calgary. I don't know. I'm not sure. Like I need to get back into a little bit more of a financially stable place. We in I don't know if you guys know any, but Calgary, Alberta and Canada, we're like a big like oil and gas boom town. So our main industry here is oil and gas. I guess it would be similar to Texas, but
yeah.
There's like we're in like a mega recession now because of the pandemic here. And I don't know. This stuff, like, I don't know. Like, I'm stressed out about it. That's why I think that I need to get an agent to get out of the city. But I don't really feel comfortable traveling yet. Plus, I think it's, like, a little bit early to go and start working in other cities. Actually, I canceled this trip on March 10th, and we went into lockdown on March 14th. I had a 3.5-week trip planned to Toronto and Montreal. I was going to meet with like some record labels. I had some like agents in mind and my goal was to go out and try and get, I had Airbnbs and apartments in both cities and I was just going to go and work in both cities and see what I could do there in Canada and just work with some different people. And so that was obviously all put on hold. So I'd like to do that eventually maybe to try and get the commercial ball rolling a little bit. I don't know. I'm actually having a hard time answering this question because I don't really know what to do in the commercial realm, but I do know that I'm going to need to get some bigger jobs eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you say commercial, are you including that with like musicians and stuff? Or is that more of like advertising, like, you know, for like brands?
I mean, it's all commercial work. If you're doing it for money, it's like a commercial job. Yes, the musicians are commercial as well. I guess when I say commercial, I mean like the big advertising jobs.
Yeah.
Because those are the ones that usually pay really well, bands, and it's always the most creative work, but it typically doesn't pay as well.
Right.
Yeah. I think probably when you get at a certain level as a musician or as a band, then there's, you know, some good profit to be made by the artists that you work with. But typically when I say commercial, I mean advertising gigs.
Yeah.
That's always the struggle working with musicians too. And nothing against them. It's my favorite thing to do. Like if I were to, I used to do that a lot living in Nashville, just having coworkers that were in bands working on their album. And then, you know, hey, we need the album art. Hey, oh, you shoot video too? Awesome. Let's throw a little music video. And like some of the best experiences, and I learned so much. But literally, I'm throwing my own money into their projects too, because it's like, again, you're just like collaborating with people to make something amazing. Yeah. But again, that stuff just doesn't pay the bills, unfortunately.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't.
Yeah, but it's so much fun. It's so much fun.
And the people, like getting to work with these artists is like phenomenal. Yes. And getting to collaborate with them is phenomenal. And it's all really, really fun. So I don't want to stop doing that by any means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I just need to figure out like where to get the side of my business back so that it's profitable again. It's not that it's totally not profitable. It's just night and day from this time in 2019.
Right.
The ideal place, I think, as a photographer would be to get to that point where you're shooting commercial jobs, and I air quote that, but you're being called on to shoot them on film because that's your aesthetic.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Like, hey, come shoot this ad campaign for Topshop. by the way, yeah. can you do your thing and do it all on film? We'll dredge up a film budget for it. You do your thing as a photographer. Like, that's like the dream, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
That is the dream.
Yeah, I think I have that dream at least like two or three times a week. And then I wake up and I'm like, oh, wait, it's April 3rd.
kind of like, I try not to think about it too much, but just like thinking about the last year of our lives that we've all lost and not seeing our families and not being able to get to where we want to be professionally. But it'll come, you know?
Yeah.
It'll come.
So how was Canada with like supporting artists and stuff? Like, I know a lot of artist friends that I had that worked creatively, like, couldn't collect any sort of unemployment benefits or anything like that. Like, they were just, you know, stagehands down to people that just set up lights and stuff at concerts, like totally screwed when it came down to it. Were you guys a little bit better on that end or was it about the same?
Our federal government really took care of us.
Some that's
people
amazing.
Will probably dispute that. But and it's still ongoing. It's basically a universal income, like a monthly
universal income.
There were a lot of guidelines, and I haven't done my taxes yet, so I might actually get penalized for it because I did take money from the government. But they really, and now there's a huge discussion here about how governments should carry on some type of basic universal income for artists, and I don't want to get into politics, but for me,
I get that.
It really, really, really helped me. So I was able to focus on making new work and trying new things and shooting film in the studio and growing my career because I didn't really have to super stress out. It's still really stressful. Don't get me wrong. It's expensive to live as a human being, period. But I was 100%, able to stress out a little bit less about the financial side of things and just kind of put my head down and work and focus and try to make plans for when and what I was going to do when this is all over.
California took care of us too. I was on unemployment for a little while as well because in the beginning, I was like, I had all these things lined up and like the week after lockdown, you know, had all these jobs that were going to be like a monthly gig and all the stuff just like gone away. So, and because I live in California, a lot of my friends do work in the industry. I was like saying, like, I was expecting all this extra money to, and they're like, you should sign up. Like, it's like you qualify because you're a freelance person. Yeah. So I was able to like, it saved.
And like, I don't like film. I don't know about you guys down there, but I think Calgary especially, it's very expensive for film here. But like shooting any type of film is like, sometimes I can actually barely afford it, but I do it anyway.
Yeah. No, it's how it's in the last like 3 or 4 years, it's really become very expensive to be a film. I mean, it used to be maintain, you know, you'd spend a couple $100 on film a month or something like that. But now it's like, Chris, I laugh because I think about when you're like, I got my $100 Christmas film and you showed your picture. It was like five rolls of film or something. It's like, damn, that's what $100 gets now.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I'm a hoarder, so I have like big ass cabinet filled of film, and I won't have to worry about it for a while. But like, it's kind of scary, and I get it. To keep this ball rolling, we need to, you know, chip in a little more so these companies can, you know, feed their families and da da. But you know, I get it. But damn, it's so expensive now.
There was a time when they didn't think that Kodak was gonna make it. Do you guys remember? Oh. Not Kodak.
Yeah, crazy.
I think about that every day. I have a joke with my family and stuff. I'm just like, I need to start learning how to like make my own film developers and stuff, because like if this world does fall apart in the next couple years, like I can still shoot film, because I would be devastated if I like there was no option to do that anymore.
I don't know what the community would do. Can you imagine?
Well, when Polaroid died, the Impossible Project bought all the equipment and the patents or whatever, and then started
making
Polaroid again, air quote again. So I don't know. We're a bunch of nerds and we're like resilient, so
for real.
Figure it out.
I'm so down with that. Like, I will give my blood, sweat, and tears to keep this thing alive.
Same.
We'll be right back with a listener question for Heather right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk comes from Polaroid. Use the promo code ANALOGTALK10 on your first purchase on film at Polaroid.com.
Just wanted to hop in here and let you guys know about our Develop and Hang Nights. Now, it is a Patreon-only exclusive. We have done a bunch already. It's a ton of fun. We develop some film. We talk shop. We hang out. We laugh. It's just a really good time. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, and if you want to help support the show, this is the best way to do it. So just head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. There's a bunch of stuff over there, so check it out. Thanks, guys.
All right, so this question comes from Michaela, and she asks, how do you navigate being in commercial photography as a woman, given that the industry is mainly made up of men?
That is a loaded question.
Uh-huh.
I would be lying if I said that I haven't experienced a fair amount of adversity over the years. Just little things like, you know, if you're not like a technical genius, I'm pretty good on the technical side of things, but I've definitely been spoken down to a lot. Mm-hmm. Just even recently, like at a local place in Calgary, I don't know how to answer this. I think it takes, and I hope that this is okay, but I think it takes a certain type of woman to work as a photographer. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to have a thick skin, and you have to be... Yeah. Ballsy, and the physical strength alone sometimes is like,
yeah.
Like wow. Working as a commercial photographer. Also, I don't have a family. I'm single. I don't have children.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know how I would have done this career with just the financial costs alone, you know?
Right.
The financial obligations of being a mother and having a family and also having a commercial photography studio and all the gear. Like, how do you do that? I don't know.
Yeah.
So I guess for me, I just, at this point, I don't even really look at it as gender.
Mm.
I'm a photographer and I produce this type of work. And if that bothers you, you can go elsewhere. I do think that the online conversation that's happening now about publications and magazines actively hiring BIPOC photographers and female photographers more so, I think that that's a really important conversation to keep having. I myself like to try and promote this, that type of messaging on my social platforms, because I do really feel strongly about it.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a daughter and she went into photography, I definitely wouldn't discourage her, but I would definitely give her the pointers to be strong and to have a thick skin and, you know, to just do you, basically.
Right.
And then I think the final thing is just try to contribute back to your community. So a few years ago, for the photography festival here, it's called Exposure. I co-curated, I came up with the idea and I approached a female run gallery here. And we co-curated an all female identifying gallery exhibition.
I love it.
So that was something that I felt really strongly about, that I really wanted to do. And that's absolutely something I would like to do with our gallery space again, is just give the floor to these artists that, you know, maybe would have to compete otherwise.
Right.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Is that a good answer?
That's a great answer. Yeah.
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 It's
I wish that I could say that I haven't experienced adversity. And sometimes, you know, I'm like, was it really that bad? But no.
Yeah.
Like, I look at like some of the things that have been said to me, and I've even, you know, said it to some of my male photographer friends. I'm like, I feel like that person wouldn't say that to you. I feel like that person wouldn't mansplain that to you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's like from like a career standpoint, I don't like, we, like you said, like you've like, oh, I guess it wasn't that bad. Like, but it's just like a feeling, like having to have the feeling like ever in your career, if like, if I was a man, like I've had that feeling more times than I want to say. I felt like they are not hiring me because they're not taking me seriously because I'm a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's disgusting. I'm sorry. That shit just pisses me off so much.
Because we're having these conversations now, the younger photographers, I think for the most part coming up, the younger cis, you know, male photographers, they're a lot more in tune And so that's, yeah. I think, why we need to keep having these conversations. I think it's less intimidating to, you know, I think that generally the Instagram community, the younger Instagram community, is really supportive of my work and will DM me and ask me questions or advice on things, which is nice. Like, at that point, then you're taking away the gender. It's just photographers to photographers.
Right.
Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned, like, the word photographer before. It's like the same thing as, like, actor was a word for the acting.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, it got changed. Someone was, oh, it should be actress. And it's like, why? Like, I would never want anybody to make a female version of photographer, you know? Like, yeah.
Yeah, there's, like... That's funny. Wow. I'm going to have to tell Michaela that we answered her question.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great question. I think, like, her asking that question is making us have the conversation and really, like, having the conversation, because I don't want to have the conversation in any sort of way as, like, a spiteful, like, oh, men are whatever.
Never.
You know, it's never about that, because I've had so many wonderful men in my career and friends in the film community who are like you said, they're in tune to it and are aware of it and want to lift, you know. So I think having the conversation is just the most important thing, and to make people aware, like, think, like, oh, well, there's so much, like, I came across your work because we've you know, put together a little community of its own, a film sorority. Yeah. Like, I didn't know about you. It's like putting other kinds of people in front of people's eyes, which I think is really, like, I'm getting so just motivated, inspired by. I'm just loving every minute of it. So I think that's the most important thing when it comes to these kind of conversations.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Michaela. We really appreciate that question.
Thanks, Michaela. Hi, Michaela.
Yeah. And great answer, Heather. Seriously.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
We have a two-part question for you, and this, we say it's the tough questions. If you were stranded on a desert island and can only take one film camera with you, so you can only shoot it for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
Oh, geez. I feele like over time this question would shift for me. Like, if you asked me this last year,
definitely.
I probably would have answered it differently from now. But for right now, I'm going to say a Mamiya 645. The autofocus ones that they did in the 90s. What's it called? I want to Google it and look it up. It's like Mamiya 645. It was an autofocus.
Yeah, so I think it's the Mamiya 645 AFD.
I think that's it. The negative is like a little bit bigger than a 35 millimeter, but it's not square, but it's not a 6.7.
Yeah.
It's like a 645, I think they called it. Anyway, I've experimented with that camera a bunch of times. I used to shoot with one when I lived in Toronto. I really want to get my hands on one soon. I'm finding, for me, I kind of need the autofocus right now.
Yeah.
I just, my eyes are not what they used to be, and the autofocus really helps me, especially when you're shooting on film, because you know that, you know, the sharpness is kind of critical.
Right.
And it's obviously, it's Mamiya. So basically anything Mamiya, I'm just like,
Oh, cool.
Yeah, dude, I'm such a Mamiya. That's my brand right there. I love their glass is just phenomenal. Yeah.
I wish I'd never sold mine.
Yeah.
I sold mine out of photography school when it was like, oh, I'll never need this again.
Yeah, no, those are great cameras. Yeah.
I know, they're so good.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I would take probably on this day right now. That's probably what I would take.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, good answer. Good answer.
We have the second part of this question is, what's your white whale camera? Is there anything you're like lusting after that you don't have or never shot, but like want so bad?
Well, that camera. I have shot that camera, but it's been like 10 years. A couple of months ago, I was like really obsessed with getting a Pentax 6.7.
Oh, yeah.
Another
like
fantastic
I really just
camera.
Was like really obsessed with it. When I get these ideas in my brain, I'm just like, hey, how can I make this work financially?
Yeah,
I can't,
that's
do it.
A little the same.
But I was like, I really need this, you know. So
of course,
really wanted one with an autofocus prism. But I really am actually kind of glad that I didn't pull the trigger on that, because I don't quite think that I need the autofocus. Other than that, I'd really love to try it. Shooting with a Contax. It's like the hipster camera right now, the point and shoot Contax.
The T2?
Yeah, the T2.
That was my white whale I just acquired recently.
Oh, really? How do you like it?
It's really nice. It's really nice. I'm not shooting it as much as I should be, because I'm currently still obsessed with my Leica M4 that I just got recently. So I'm not doing it justice, but it's a great camera. It's great for, I feel like, for everyday, like, point, because, you know, it's a point and shoot, so it's, like, perfect for that.
And, like, vacations start opening up, man. Yeah. Just throw that. You don't need to take a million cameras. No. Just take that camera.
Yeah. You know? I like it better than the Olympus. I have the Olympus point and shoot, the other sort of hipster camera right now.
I think the Contax T2, it's definitely, like, the sharpest. Yeah. It's the glass on that is, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, not, like, super crazy, but the Olympus is okay. It takes pretty decent. The metering in it is, like, phenomenal. I think I'd really love to try the Contax. I just cannot believe how expensive they are. That was like a $70 camera when it came out.
Was it really? I didn't even want to look.
Actually, don't quote me on that. But it was like not like a super expensive camera.
But they are. Between like if you were putting them together, like the Olympus Epic and a T2, the T2 is like the Rolls Royce of it's titanium.
Yeah.
It's got weight to it.
Right.
Say you're like walking and you drop your stylus on the ground. That thing, you're going to get some really bad cracks stuff.
Right.
You drop the T2, you could damage something in it, but it's a tank. Like it's going to be a thud.
It's
definitely not worth like $1,500 or anything crazy. Like, well, I don't know. Maybe they are. Chris knows.
I didn't pay that, thankfully.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
But I feel like if I didn't pull the trigger then, I would be like, the next time I look, it's going to be $1,500.
Yeah,
no, for real.
It's
yeah.
one of those things. I bought a Mamiya 6 when I wanted to go into medium format. Mm. I bought a Mamiya 6 with all three lenses on eBay. And it was expensive at the time, but I'm glad that I did that then because now they're like double the price. And like the Olympus, I just ask about the Olympus and the Contax together because a lot of my favorite photographers that I follow on Instagram shoot with both of those point and shoots. And I have the Olympus. Mm-hmm. I just always wondered how the Contax. But yeah, the Olympus was like a $70 camera when it came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a great camera, though. I mean, I've had a million
of those. I have two of those.
They're super. Yeah, Chris owns my black one.
Yeah,
now.
I have to get it.
That's awesome.
Silver at that matching can. It's like anyway.
Got to have the champagne in the black. Yeah, yep.
That's so cool.
Could you imagine if I needed to be like, okay, I have the T2. I need to get it silver. I need to get it. No, that I would go literally broke.
I need a black M4. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, I could talk about cameras all day.
Yeah, the M6 has been my white whale for a while. That or a Hasselblad. Definitely.
Oh, a Hasselblad would be nice.
Yeah, I'm borrowing a Hasselblad right now. You know, when you borrow, it's like, okay, let me figure out if I need this, right? And then you're like, oh no, I do.
Oh, you need it.
Yeah, I need it.
Of course you do.
Yeah, but did you see? I got to essentially hold Raphael's M6 over last weekend. My friend of ours.
No, I didn't.
Of the community, and that's an M6 is like that's a nice camera.
Oh yeah.
So thankfully for my wallet. I've never like super allowed myself to get into Leica. Why? I don't know.
It's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, if you could stay away.
All right.
Otherwise, you're going to be like, I have an M4, but like the M6 is so nice. I should just do that too. No.
I don't think it's as nice as my M7.
Yes. See?
Jeez. This is Heather. Control yourself.
Yeah.
I think my next purchase will be that Mamiya, the 645. I think I really want one of those. Just for commercial work,
that's a great,
I think it would like really be a great camera.
Mm.
Oh yeah, the detail you get on that, and it complements. Like if you're, you know, you got the old sling on, and you got two cameras, like 6.45 complements 35mm well because it's like its big brother.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's still got like that nice crisp film look, but it's still like a little bit of grain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Definitely.
I gotta get through the other side of this pandemic first.
Yeah.
Can we please be over? Yeah. Please. Come on. Jeez.
Seriously.
Anyway, well, Heather, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you for taking the time to hang out with us today. Where can everybody check out your work? And you can plug the collective as well.
Okay, so you can visit me at my website. A lot of my work is on there at heathersites.com. So my last name is spelled S as in Sam, AITZ.com. There's a link for the studio there as well, which is idleeyescollective.com. And I'm really active on Instagram and posting a lot of stuff, a lot of new and old work alike. And so that's just my name at Heather Seitz, SAITZ. Yeah.
Yeah. Timothy, where can everybody check you out?
All right, guys, you can find me on Instagram. It's at Timothy Makeups. I also make some film photography videos. Those are on YouTube. Easiest way to find those, just search Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of stuff there. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
So I am Chris B. Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We are Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram and Analog Talk Pod on Twitter. We have a Facebook page and a group you can join and share stuff and all that. And also, you guys can follow the Film Sorority if you are so inclined.
Yeah.
We're doing some stuff over there that's really awesome. So we'd appreciate that. Awesome.
Awesome.
Heather, thank you again for joining us. This was a blast.
Thanks, guys.
All right. We'll see everybody next time.
Bye. All right. First off, Chris and I would like to thank Heather for coming on the show. Heather, thanks for taking the time. It was so great to meet you, hearing your story, talking about all the stuff you have going on. It just a great time. Thanks so much for taking the time out. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Even for $1, $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We're also doing our develop and hangs. Chris and I are doing solo shows. She's posted one already. I got one coming up for next week. It's going to be awesome. And just a bunch of other stuff over there. And also, it is the best way to help support the show. If that sounds like something you'd be interested in, again, it's patreon.com/analogtalk. And for the patrons that already help support the show, guys, you mean the world to us. You have no idea how much it means that you guys are here for us. It's awesome. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. Cool. I guess we will see you next week with an all-new episode. All right, guys, keep shooting and all that fun stuff. We'll see you soon.